You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, we're back on the record on CR 22211623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. This is continuing with the defense case in chief today. As we left off yesterday, I believe Joseph Murray was on the stand, and I'll note that the jurors have each returned and signed their juror affirmation for the date. If we're ready to proceed then with additional testimony, we'll go ahead and have the jurors brought in at this time, please.
All right. Please offer as a count for you.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right. Good morning, everyone. We are on the record on CR 22211623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. We're continuing with the defense case in chief. The court would note the jurors are all returned and present, properly seated. Jurors have each signed their juror affirmation that they followed the court's admonishing instruction yesterday as you left. So thank you again for continuing to follow that as you have throughout this trial. The witness is on the stand, Mr. Murray, who's previously been placed under oath. We were continuing with direct examination when we broke for the day yesterday, or I think, did we complete direct examination?
Yes, Judge.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you for the reminder then. Direct had concluded, so we'll start on cross-examination at this time. And is that going to be you, Mr. Wixom?
It will, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Wixom, then if you'd like to commence with your cross, you may do so.
Thank you. Your Honor, before I begin, may I ask to be provided with the state's previously admitted exhibit 77G, as in George?
Yes.
Thank you.
And Judge, again, what exhibit did he reference?
77G.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, may I begin while the clerk's looking for that?
Yes, if you'd like, you may.
Thank you, Judge. Good morning, Ms. Murray.
Morning.
So I want to start this morning by revisiting the questions you were asked by the defense counsel yesterday. Do you remember when you first took the stand, he had asked you to explain to the jury how many times that you had met with him?
Yes.
And do you remember what your answer was to that?
Once 2 days ago and one other time on the phone.
Okay. Now, you wouldn't disagree, would you, that the loss of Tammy Daybell would be and was a traumatic experience for your wife and for her siblings?
Absolutely. All right. I absolutely would agree that that would be the case.
Likewise, would you agree that the finding of Tylee and JJ's bodies on Chad's property was likewise a traumatic experience?
Yes, for the whole family, indeed.
So it would be safe to say then that over the course of the last 5 years, you have probably had many conversations with your spouse about the surrounding facts, haven't you?
Yes.
And likewise, is it also safe to say that you've had many conversations with her siblings about these same situations?
I wouldn't say many, but because we didn't live in the same household and we weren't gathering weekly even, so I wouldn't say many.
But you did have conversations over the course of the last 5 years with the siblings?
Yes.
Okay. You said that you didn't live in the same house with them? Is that what you said?
With the exception of one brother, one of Emma's brothers, yeah.
Okay. And we'll come back to that. With respect to the events of October 9th, you were asked some questions about the layout of your house relative to Chad Daybell's, and you explained that your house is kitty corner.
Correct.
And you'd also referenced in your testimony that you've testified previously about these things in a grand jury proceeding.
Correct.
And that would have been roughly May of 2021.
Correct.
And Mr. Pryor had asked you some questions relative to your testimony in that proceeding. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Okay. And those questions in part were directed towards your information about this October 9th attempted shooting of Tammy.
Correct.
Now, I just want to be clear, in your grand jury testimony, and I believe yesterday you confirmed that you did not see the attempted shooting.
That is correct.
And in fact, you weren't even aware of the shooting until after you received a 911 notification?
Notification on Facebook.
I'm sorry. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah.
And it was after that notification that you asked your wife about it. She hadn't seen it, correct?
She had just seen it as I was going into the house. About the same time, roughly.
Thank you. And then you, either one of you reached out to Tammy and called her?
Yes, she did.
And so you at some point talked to Tammy, or did you at least overhear the conversation she was having with your spouse?
Yes.
Which was it?
I didn't directly talk to her. I overheard the conversation.
Okay. Now, just for clarification, your testimony today, yesterday, and at the grand jury is that you don't have any personal knowledge with respect to however that shooting occurred or whatever went down. Fair?
That is correct.
Now, when you finished talking to Tammy or your wife did, you decided to make a 911 call?
My wife was still on the phone with Tammy when I made the call.
Okay. And you did that, I presume, because you were alarmed at the situation?
Yes.
And at that point, to your knowledge, had Chad ever made a phone call?
Not that I am aware of.
And frankly, at that point, Tammy had not called 911 either, had she?
No.
Judge, objection. There's no foundation to establish that he would have any knowledge of that.
Overruled, not timely.
You were also asked questions by Mr. Pryor yesterday about having talked to Deputy Cannon.
Correct.
Back on October 9th when this attempted shooting happened.
Correct.
You had explained that you went into the roadway and met him and gave him some details.
Correct.
And in fact, I think you denied yesterday that you had ever told Deputy Cannon that you had heard Tammy scream.
That is correct.
Likewise, I think you denied that you went over to the house immediately after the scream and didn't see anything suspicious. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So then it's your testimony that Deputy Cannon, if he put that in his report, has it wrong. Is that fair?
That is absolutely fair.
So he has inaccurate information.
That is true.
And I think you tried to explain that away somewhat yesterday by the fact that...
Judge, I'm going to object to the characterization explaining away.
Sustained.
You don't disagree that yesterday on this point, you had explained that when you had met with Deputy Cannon in the roadway, you were quick to give him information because you wanted him to go search.
Correct.
So isn't it possible that whatever you were relaying to Deputy Cannon in that quick interaction, one reason for the discrepancy could be he misunderstood what you were saying?
Possible, but very unlikely.
So you believe he was intentionally inaccurate?
Correct.
Okay. With respect to what you said yesterday about Tammy never having described this paintball gun as anything but a paintball gun, you did testify to that, yes?
Yep.
Isn't it possible that you simply could have been mistaken about Tammy's full description of what happened as you were overhearing and listening to a conversation that she was having with your wife?
Due to the fact that it was on speakerphone, I don't think so.
Well, you said a second ago that it still could have been possible that given the nature of the situation, Deputy Cannon could have been confused by your explanation to him, correct? You just said that.
Yes, but I was also very clear in what I explained to him.
But you don't believe that you're beyond having that same kind of miscommunication if that did occur?
No, based off of the fact that both my wife and I had the same understanding.
Well, I'm not asking about your wife's understanding. I'm asking you yes or no. You certainly could have had the same kind of misunderstanding.
I don't believe so.
But you could have, or you simply...
Judge asked and answered.
Sustained.
After you gave that information, whatever information you gave to Deputy Cannon, did you have any further conversations with him about this?
No.
In fact, you went back afterwards and talked to your wife and talked to your mother-in-law some more about this incident?
When are you referring to?
Any time at all.
Maybe the next day or after that. I don't recall having a specific conversation about it after.
Now, yesterday, I'm going to move on to October 18th. You had testified, and I think you'd confirmed through your defense counsel, that on the 18th of October of 2019, that you had been helping a friend do some work. Is that correct?
Correct.
And in fact, it was because of that work that you felt the need to borrow your mother-in-law's truck. Is that correct?
My in-law's truck, yes.
Okay. Well, in fact, going back to the grand jury testimony back in May of 2021, when you were asked about this, do you disagree that in the transcript, you specifically described it as your mother-in-law's truck?
I may have, but it was owned by
just
both
yes
of them.
Or no is all I asked for. So I think you also explained yesterday that on that day when you needed the truck, you went to her to get the keys at work, correct?
Correct.
And so you had indicated that she had the truck at work, correct?
Correct.
So on that day, she'd driven the truck.
Yes.
And that was October 18th.
Yep.
That would have been just under 10 days from the shooting incident, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And in fact, when you returned the keys, you returned those same keys back to Tammy, correct?
Correct.
Now, you also testified yesterday that at some point, Chad Daybell gave you that very truck.
Yep.
Do you still have that truck?
Yes.
You still drive it?
Not right now because it has some mechanical issues.
Okay. But you were given the truck back in December of 2019?
Yep.
Right. Did you drive it for some time after it was given to you?
Yes.
Now, you likewise have explained that you have been married to Emma for 7 years, I think.
Almost 7 years.
Yeah. So roughly 5 years ago, you would have been married to her a couple of years?
Correct.
At that point in time, you had one child?
Correct.
At that point in time, you lived across the street, kitty corner?
Correct.
And then, isn't it true that on June 9th of 2019, of 2020, when Chad was arrested, you and Emma moved into Chad's home?
Correct. Well, are you saying after June 9th, sorry? Okay, yes, not on June 9th, but after, yes.
Yes, okay. You know, if I might have permission to publish State 77G at this time on the Elmo.
You may.
So going back to receiving that truck, you were given that truck by Chad. Yesterday, you testified in 2018, but I think you later clarified that was 2019. Is that
correct?
Right? Okay. And that was December of 2019?
Correct.
Did you explain the occasion as to why Chad gave you the truck in December of 2019?
No.
Why did he give you the truck in 2019?
Because we only had one working vehicle at the time.
And so on June 9th of 2020, it was shortly after that, that you moved into Chad's home.
Correct.
That's when he got arrested, correct?
Correct.
And that's the day they found Tylee and JJ on that property, correct?
Yep.
Okay. Now, I want to call your attention to this exhibit, and I want to invite you to go down and look at the entry, the fifth entry that's dated June 9th. Will you look at that, please?
Yep.
And what is that reflecting?
A deposit into my checking account.
For what amount?
$8,000.
And who made that deposit?
I am not exactly sure.
You're not aware if that would have came from Chad Daybell?
Well, I know we got $8,000, but I wasn't sure. It just said $8,000. So
you don't disagree that this was $8,000 that came from Chad Daybell?
No.
Okay. No, you don't disagree?
No, I don't disagree.
Okay. And that occurred, I'm done, Your Honor. That occurred, again, the day he was arrested.
Yep.
So to be clear, Chad Daybell, in December 2019, gave you his truck.
Yep.
Okay. And then later in June 9th, when he's arrested, he deposited $8,000 into your account.
Yep.
Correct. And then he had you guys move into his house, correct?
Yep.
Okay. And were you aware that he also gave Emma $9,000 in cash that day?
Yes.
Okay. So he gave you roughly $17,000 in cash,
correct?
Yes. Had given you one of his vehicles, correct?
Yep.
And gave you a place to live, correct?
Yep.
You were asked questions, and we've already alluded to this, that at some point you had found out that JJ and Tylee had been buried in Chad's backyard.
Correct.
Right. Right. You had described, in fact, that you believe JJ had been buried by the pond and Tylee by the fire pit. Correct?
Yeah.
Now, have you ever met JJ and Tylee's mother?
Lori Vell?
Yes.
No. I mean, yes. Sorry. I went back to the thing you were talking about. Them in particular. Yes, I've met Lori.
Yeah. And isn't it true that the first day you met Lori was the day after Tammy's funeral at Chad's house?
Yes.
So she came to Chad's house and that's where the family met her?
Yes.
And that was it the immediate day after her funeral?
I don't recall the exact day, if it was the immediate day after, but shortly after, yes.
Yeah, and you had testified to that effectively, that yep. It was the day after. Have you ever heard the name Alex Cox?
Yes.
And who is Alex Cox?
Lori Vallow's brother.
Had you ever met Alex Cox?
No.
Had you at any point in time ever seen Alex Cox on Chad's property?
No.
You were asked some questions yesterday about the layout of Chad's property. Do you recall specifically getting a question about the long driveway?
Yes.
And you were asked a question about whether or not someone could access the long driveway to a place behind the property where they then could not be seen from the roadway. Do you recall that? And you acknowledge that there is a place back there where someone could access through the driveway, through a gate, and then not be visible from the roadway to the public while they're back there.
Yep.
So then you wouldn't disagree. And that area was in the general area that accessed both the pond and the fire pit.
Correct? Judge, I'm going to object at this point. Counsel's testifying.
Sustained.
Didn't you testify yesterday that that access point was in the general area of the pond and the fire pit?
Yes.
So then you wouldn't disagree that whomever, whether it was Chad or somebody else.
Judge, objection, calls for speculation.
On that second part of the question, I will sustain that.
Okay. You wouldn't disagree that anybody who buried those children could have used that driveway and have done so outside the visibility of the roadway, correct?
From the Salem Highway, no. They would not have been able to.
Now, you testified also that at some point in time, Detective Hermosillo had been seen driving by this property?
Yep, before and after Chad's arrest.
And that was something that you had observed personally?
Yep.
And at that point, had you met Detective Hermosillo?
Yes.
And that's how you were able to identify him?
Yep. And I've also seen him on Facebook.
Okay. Did you see Detective Hermosillo the day that Tylee and Gigi were found?
I can't recall for sure on that day.
You don't have any reason to disagree that Detective Hermosillo was one of the lead investigators in this case?
No, I have no reason to disagree on that.
No reason to disagree that, in fact, he was there the day that the bodies were found?
I would assume so.
So you wouldn't disagree that for law enforcement to drive back and forth by this property, that they may have suspected the bodies were and, in fact, found the bodies there. That wouldn't necessarily be unusual, would it?
Perhaps no. However, this was even after the bodies were taken out, that he would slowly drive by the property.
And to that point, so you would disagree that a detective who discovers bodies on a property, arrests somebody from the property, might have a surveillance or investigative interest in continuing to drive by the property to identify if someone else was coming back to the property after the bodies had removed. You don't disagree with that, do you?
I don't see the reason for it.
You're not a law enforcement officer, are you?
Absolutely not. I would rather choose any other profession.
Okay.
Choose any other profession.
But you don't disagree that a law enforcement officer who found bodies on a property might want to continue to observe that property to see if anything else suspicious occurred there at the property?
I don't see the reason for him returning.
Do you think finding bodies on a property is a big deal?
Judge, I'm going to object. It's been asked and answered at least a couple of times.
Sustained.
When Detective Hermosillo was driving by the property, did he ever make contact with you?
No.
Were you aware that some kind of memorial had been placed on that property relative to Tylee and JJ?
Yes, but the slow driving by wasn't just on 200 North. It was also on Salem Highway.
You don't disagree that for a law enforcement officer to find two children buried on a property would be a traumatic event, do you?
I don't disagree. However, I don't understand why during working hours we would need to return and visit the memorial.
So that's not understandable to you how a law enforcement officer might have a traumatic experience and go back and visit the property.
I didn't say that.
So then you agreed it could be?
Yes.
Your Honor, I have no further questions.
All right. Redirect, Mr. Pryor.
And Judge, I'll need 77G.
Very well. I don't know if it's still up there. If it is, Mr. Wixom, just please leave it.
Did I return that exhibit back to Marshall? I can't recall. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge, may I publish 77G?
You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
I'd like you to count down the fourth entry on 77G.
Okay.
It says the name Seth C. Daybell. Do you see that?
I do.
Can you tell me who Seth C. Daybell is?
Seth is the son of Chad and Tammy Daybell, also my wife's brother.
And do you see how much money Seth got?
$8,000.
Okay. Are you aware of any of the other children of Chad Daybell getting money as well?
I believe all of them did.
Do you know what the amounts were?
$8,000.
Okay. Judge, I have nothing else. Thank you.
All right. That'll conclude the testimony then of Mr. Murray. Is he going to remain under your subpoena, Mr. Pryor?
He is not, Judge.
Has the state got him under subpoena?
You do, gentlemen.
Okay. You are released then from any subpoena. Thank you for coming in and testifying, Mr. Murray. You can be excused.
And Your Honor, before we bring in the next witness, may we have a sidebar?
Yes. All right, Mr. Pryor, you can call your next witness. You
had permission to approach the podium.
Yes.
Dr. Kathy Raven. And Judge, while we're waiting, my understanding is there's a stipulation of the parties on Defense Exhibit 135. It encompasses the forensic report of Dr. Kathy Raven. I'd move for admission of 135.
I can take that up. I'll prefer to get that admitted once we have the witness on the stand.
Yeah, you can hang on. That's all. Thank you.
You solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God.
Yes, I do.
A little bit of cheating.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
May I, Judge?
Give us just a sec here, Mr. Pryor.
Oh, okay. Okay, thanks.
All right, Mr. Pryor, before we go on inquiry, I believe this is an expert witness, so likewise, or likely not subject to the exclusionary rules. Is that your understanding?
It is, Judge.
Okay. You may inquire then. Thank you, Mr. Pryor.
Good morning, Dr. Raven. Would you please state your name, spell your last name for the record?
Catherine Raven, R-A-V-E-N.
And can you tell me what your occupation is?
I am a forensic pathologist.
Okay. Explain to me what a forensic pathologist is.
I'm a medical doctor. I actually did 4 years of medical school. Then I did became a pathologist, which is the doctor that's at the hospital, does all the lab tests, biopsies. But I specialized even further in that. I went into forensic pathology, and that's applying the knowledge of medicine as a doctor. And really the main focus is to determine cause of death in individuals.
Okay. And in what state do you practice?
Primarily in California.
And do you have any cities or municipalities that you associate with that you do work primarily for?
Yes, I'm a contract forensic pathologist in California, and I primarily work in Alameda County, which is the Bay Area, and also in Butte County.
Okay. And how long have you been a licensed forensic pathologist?
Oh, 25, 26 years now.
And you're presently, obviously you testified, you're presently engaged in that profession at the present time. Is that right?
That's correct.
And where did you receive your training in pathology?
In pathology, I received it in Colorado, Denver, Colorado, at the University of Colorado Health Science Center. It was 4 years of general pathology.
And what sort of certifications or what sort of certifications are required in order to be a pathologist?
Well, to be a general pathologist, you could either be an anatomical pathologist or a clinical pathologist. So after you do a residency, you would take a board examination. I'm certified in both anatomical and clinical pathology. I also did a year of neuropathology on the studying of the nervous system, injury to the nervous system. And then I did a year of forensic pathology, which is where I do subspecialize and just did forensic pathology. I am also board certified in forensic pathology.
And you jumped the gun on me. And when we say that there is a, is that the American Board of Pathology?
Yes.
And what is the American Board of Pathology?
It's just a board. It's national. Every pathologist who's board certified takes the exact same test, regardless of where they did their training at. To be a board certified pathologist, you'd have to pass the examination.
And I assume then that you passed that examination.
Yes.
Are you, and do you have any publications or any theses that you've written as part of your 25 year career?
As a fellow, when I was in training, I had a paper published. But other than that, I've been a practicing pathologist.
So you do the hands-on work of a pathologist?
Correct.
You're not an academic person?
That's correct.
Okay. Have you testified previously in any proceedings?
Yes.
Have you previously been approved as an expert in the field of forensic pathology?
Yes.
And can you give me approximately how many times you've done that?
Probably close to 300 or more.
Okay. Now, I skipped one question. Is part of your certification, is that a national certification?
Yes. It's a board certification, so it's a national test, yes.
Okay. So in other words, you can apply your principles of forensic pathology anywhere in the United States. It's a scientific process. Would that be fair?
Yes. As far as the pathology itself, you have to be licensed in a particular state to practice in that state. But as a pathologist, I could go anywhere and be a pathologist.
Now, in this particular case, you were retained by my office to conduct an investigation regarding this case. Is that correct?
Correct.
And the area of investigation you were to conduct was in what area of this case?
If I'm understanding the question, I was asked to review the autopsy report and other pertinent materials.
Okay. And when you did review the autopsy report?
Correct.
And do you have a recollection of all of the other documents that you reviewed?
A summary of them, but I don't know them specifically without my report.
Would it help you if I were to provide you your report?
Yes.
Okay. Oh. And Judge, at this time, I'm going to move for admission of defense exhibit. I think it's 135.
As a statement, I'm going to review that.
Yes, Your Honor. No objection.
Very well. Defense exhibit 135 is admitted. Can you? And that's the report, Mr. Pryor, paper copy.
That is a paper copy, and I have a paper copy as well. And Dr. Raven, if you would be so kind as to just review, we can't have you read off, unfortunately, what you line by line. So if you're able to review and give us a synopsis of what you looked at after you've reviewed it, set it down, and then we'll proceed from that.
I could give a general.
Okay, go ahead. What documents did you review as part of this?
Dr. Christensen's autopsy report from Utah. Along with that were autopsy photographs. There were also some scene photographs that I reviewed. The death certificate, the original death certificate I reviewed. There was a couple reports from the coroner. I don't know if they were the official reports, but some typewritten reports from the coroner and some law enforcement investigation reports also.
Okay. And then in addition, in a previous matter, and I don't want to say what matter, in a previous matter, you looked and reviewed previous testimony as well, correct?
I reviewed previous testimony from Dr. Christensen, correct.
Okay. And you also looked at some of Dr. Marsden's remarks as well?
I don't recall her remarks as much as Dr. Christensen's.
Okay. Now, I want to go in the area of conclusions that are drawn as the result of an autopsy. And I understand there are approximately five categories that you can arrive at as a result of conclusions that you make when you're conducting an autopsy. Is that fair?
I'm not sure I'm following the question.
Okay. In this particular case, you arrived at a conclusion in terms of your review of the case. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that conclusion, there are other conclusions that someone in your field as a forensic pathologist can arrive at. Is that fair?
Yes, that's fair.
And what would some of those other conclusions be?
In this particular case?
Well, in any case. In general.
You mean as far as manner of death?
In terms of manner.
Manner of death, there's usually five categories of manner. The cause of death is the medical disease process or injury that actually caused the death. But the manner of death is how we categorize the death, really just for death certificate purposes. So either homicide, suicide, accident, undetermined, or natural death. So any one of those five for manner of death would fit a certain case. If we don't know or it doesn't fit particularly in one or the other, then we would call it undetermined.
Now, in reviewing this case, you made some summary of some of the materials in terms of what you discovered. Can you talk briefly about the summary of some of the things you arrived at as part of your review?
Well, specifically, I paid most attention to the autopsy report. It was an autopsy after embalming and a disinterment. It was a thorough autopsy. I reviewed that. There was a few injuries, some bruising, which are very nonspecific to the arms.
And if we could stop there in a minute and just talk briefly about what is nonspecific bruising?
So nonspecific bruising just means there's not a pattern to it, and anything can cause a bruise or a contusion is the same thing. It's caused by blunt force. So any blunt object, blunt surface, anything, you bump your arm, you fall, someone hits you, anything blunt to compare it to a knife should be sharp. So anything blunt can cause a bruise. So nonspecific just means we don't know what caused them. Any number of things could cause them as long as it had a blunt surface.
Okay. And at this point, when you say nonspecific, there's no way to determine what was the cause of action that resulted in the bruises on the right arm and then the one bruise on the left arm. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And then you continued with your summary. I'll allow you to continue on that with what you also summarized.
And there was no anatomical cause of death found at the autopsy.
Okay. And I'm gonna keep interrupting you as we go through that because this is important. When you say there was no anatomical cause of death, what does that mean?
When we do an autopsy, we look at every organ in the body. We pull it out, we dissect it, and we're looking for anything that may have caused death. So we do a dissection of the heart, looking for heart disease. We look at the lungs, the liver, every organ, the brain, looking for natural death, anything that may have caused death. In this particular case, nothing was found.
Okay. And then further, what other findings did you make?
And then the next step we would do is what's called toxicology, looking at the blood. Sometimes we look at the urine and also the fluid in the eye called vitreous. We analyze those and we look for any kind of drugs, toxins, or any abnormalities with those.
And would you agree that the toxicology report, at least according to your report that you provided, indicates that it was an extensive toxicology report?
Yes, it was a very extensive toxicology examination. They did extensive testing.
Okay. And at this point, there is always the possibility something could have been missed in the toxicology, correct?
Correct. So we just can't send a blood sample to the lab and say, look for anything and everything. We have to tell them what to look for. So most of the things we have are in a panel. We're really looking for, again, you know, illicit drugs. If you're looking for things specifically like poisons and other things, you have to tell them which one to look for. They can't just randomly look for it. But they did extensive testing looking for several poisons and drugs.
So at this point, aside from the extensive testing, unless it was something unusual, the likelihood is that this wasn't the result of any kind of a poisoning, correct?
More than likely. It would be funny, they couldn't detect anything. There's always things we're not going to be able to detect, and the embalming does interfere with some testing, but nothing that they tested for was positive, so it would be unlikely.
Okay. And then additional findings that you made?
I have to think for a moment. Sorry.
Need to refresh your report with your...
No, I just didn't know where I left off. I'm sorry. When you asked that last question. So we had the bruises that we talked about, and really that was it. There's no other anatomical cause of death from an anatomy perspective, from what the organs, and then there was no toxicological cause of death either.
Okay. Now the you indicated that... the body was exhumed and they performed an autopsy, and then the same day the body was reburied. Is that correct?
I don't know when it was reburied. I'm sorry.
But the autopsy was done as the same day that it was exhumed, correct?
Again, I'm not sure. I know the autopsy was done on the 19th, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure when it was exhumed, to be honest.
So the date of the autopsy was October 19th of 2019?
I believe it was December. I'm sorry. It was December 11th. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. You're right, too.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Goodness, where'd I get that from? I know where I got that from.
Right. The date of the incident was
date of her,
October 19th.
But date of her passing was, and I apologize for that.
Well, I misspoke too. So it was December 11th, 2019.
Okay. Now, the autopsy was done on December 11th of 2019. Do you recall when the date of the signature that was placed on the autopsy was placed on that document?
I believe it was in January. I can't remember the specific date of 2021.
So am I understanding that it would have been over a year plus between the time of the autopsy and the signing of the report?
It would probably be close to over two years.
Okay. And is there some explanation that you can come, logical explanation as to why there is such a gap in time between when the autopsy was done and when these folks decided to sign the document with their findings?
Objection, Your Honor, calls for speculation.
Overruled.
Do you have any idea how such a length of time?
Sometimes the toxicology testing takes a while, a few months. So if you get it back and it's negative, and you might go back and say, let's try this again. Let's try this. Let's look for this and let's look for that. That's the only thing I can think of why it would take so long to sign out a report.
Okay. And that could be the explanation, is that it took them a significant amount of time to try to find something in the toxicology that would support their theory?
Or other things, yes.
Okay. Okay. Now, you came to a conclusion in your report in regards to this case. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what was that conclusion?
My conclusion was that since there was no anatomical or toxicological cause of death, no injury to account for death, that it would be best classified as a cause of death as undetermined.
Okay. Now, when you say no physical cause of death, you did review Dr. Christensen's testimony. Is that correct?
Correct.
And there was some mention, at least during this trial, of the bruising on the arms. Is it your conclusion that those bruises could not be taken in consideration to support a different conclusion of asphyxia?
Well, again, the bruising on the arm is nonspecific. They're just bruises on the arm. They don't indicate a cause of death. They don't cause death in and of themselves. They're just nonspecific bruises on the arm. So I don't believe it supports a diagnosis of anything other than there was some blunt injury to the arms.
Okay. And in regards to the suggestion that if someone were to sit on the chest of someone to try to cause asphyxiation, did you examine or look into that possibility?
Objection, Your Honor. Counsel's testifying misstates the prior testimony.
Sustained.
Would it be a possible basis of asphyxiation by suffocation by sitting on someone's chest?
It's a difficult question. It's very difficult to sit on somebody's chest and kill them. There are reports. There was one scientific study done back in 2017. I believe it was out of San Diego, where they actually tried to figure out how much weight it would take, how much pressure it would take to do that. Usually when somebody does asphyxiate, it's usually several people on top of somebody, or in a crowd. You've heard of the stadiums where the crowds get stuck and everyone gets pushed together. That's several bodies. It's not just one. This particular study said it would be probably 450 plus pounds that would have to require to sit. So I think it'd be extraordinarily hard to sit on somebody, a healthy young person anyways, maybe an old febrile person, you might be able to, but I think it'd be very, very difficult and unlikely.
Okay. And then the possibility of asphyxiating them by just holding their arms, that's not going to do it either, correct? Just hold.
Objection, Your Honor. This misstates prior testimony. Move to strike.
Overruled.
Would just holding somebody's arms and leaving bruises, is there a way to asphyxiate someone that way?
No. So asphyxia just really means that there's no oxygen getting to the blood to supply our organs. So several things can cause asphyxia. Asphyxia is just a mechanism. It's not really even a cause of death. It's always due to something. So it might be asphyxia due to drowning, where we're not getting oxygen, asphyxia due to choking, asphyxia due to strangulation. So asphyxia in itself just means that they're not getting oxygen. That's a very nonspecific term.
Did you see any indication that there was any damage to the neck or the throat?
No, there was no obvious damage to the neck. There was some damage caused by the embalming process. May have obscured, at least on the right side of the neck, but there was no obvious hemorrhage or other injury.
Now, in reading Dr. Christensen, Dr. Marsden's reports, they established that this was homicide by asphyxia. And can you explain why you differ with that a diagnosis?
Well, it's just, it's a person we have no cause of death for. We don't know what the cause of death is. So that would be undetermined. It's an undetermined death. It happens. Probably 5 to 10% of autopsies may be undetermined. Some reports say lower. So it's not, if we just don't find anything, there's several things can cause death. without leaving any signs or indications. So since we don't know exactly what happened, we call it undetermined, and that's what I would have called this.
And some of the other possibilities other than asphyxia would include what?
As far as not leaving any signs or not having anything, a seizure can cause a death without leaving any signs. A cardiac arrhythmia can also cause death without leaving any signs. Asphyxia is one thing that can cause it. Drugs that weren't detected.
Okay. Now, in this particular case, you made note of some of the comments that were made about Tammy's past medical issues, some shaking and some lightheadedness, those sort of things. Is that something that would be consistent with a seizure diagnosis?
Well, it might be consistent with a seizure, the shaking fits that were described. Since there was no diagnosis, that's hard to say. The only way to diagnose it would have been to go to a neurologist and have it diagnosed. But certainly that's the history that we get. Some people see shaking. Sometimes it's violent. Sometimes it's even just violent. I'm sorry. Sometimes people just stare off into space. There's different kinds of seizures. So a shaking fit would be described by a layperson.
And you did touch on that, and that was the next area, is that seizures don't necessarily mean that there's episodes of violent shaking. Is that correct?
That is correct.
We've seen some of the politicians in the past several years who have just been on live camera and they just black out and there's nothing there. Those are what you...
Objection, Your Honor. Counsel's testifying. Move to strike.
Sustained. And I'll strike that last question.
So a seizure, can you describe a little bit about the types of seizures for me?
Again, you can have different types of seizures. You have larger seizures where you think of, that most people think of, the shaking, the convulsing. It could be very traumatic. Actually, you can get a lot of injuries from those, serious injuries also. Or you could have smaller ones, lighter ones, where sometimes people just might stare off into space. Sometimes they do like just repetitive type of motions with their hands or even their lips smacking. Very, very small, can be very subtle. It really depends where the focus is at and what type of seizure it is.
But whether it's a small seizure or a large seizure, ultimately, at some point, that seizure could become fatal. Is that correct?
Yes, seizures are a cause of death. We see them as a cause of death or attributed to death, not infrequently.
Okay. You also mentioned arrhythmia. Talk to me a little bit about arrhythmia.
Well, again, these are just the things that people die from that we can't see anything. An arrhythmia is an electrical disturbance, just like a seizure is an electrical disturbance in the brain. An arrhythmia is an electrical disturbance in the heart. So same thing, we may not see anything at the time of death or at the autopsy, excuse me.
Okay. And at some point with arrhythmia, there's not necessarily any signs of damage with the heart. Is that correct?
Correct. Frequently you'll see cardiac abnormalities. You might see a structural defect in the heart, some coronary artery disease. You might see something. And then if it's a sudden death, it's a presumed cardiac arrhythmia. You don't have to have a structural defect, but we do usually see that.
Okay. Now, in this particular case, Dr. Christensen came to the conclusion that this was homicide, and your conclusion is different, obviously. Is that correct?
Correct.
And as far as the explanations of the possibilities of what potentially could have caused the death without any physical signs of any structural or physical damage, what would those include?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
The causes of death that could have resulted from this, they could include a seizure, is that correct?
Yes.
They could include arrhythmia, is that correct?
Yes.
They could include asphyxia, is that correct?
Yes.
Is there really any certainty to know what was the cause of death of Tammy Daybell?
No, because all those, plus again, if there's some toxicology that we didn't pick up on, can cause death without leaving any signs.
Now, is it standard practice when there's no signs and there's no indication of what could have caused the death to take a jump to asphyxia? Is that what would be the common practice?
In my opinion, no. The way I practice and the way I've always taught people to practice in the institutions I've been associated with, again, we would call them undetermined. We do get cases where we don't find anything. We don't jump to conclusions or speculate. We just say these are things that might have happened. We don't know, so we're better left calling it undetermined. Other people might practice differently.
Okay. So it's a matter of how people practice. Would that be fair?
I think that's fair.
But in your opinion, there's no conclusion that could be drawn in this particular case?
No, there was no scientific evidence of a cause of death.
I want to talk to you about a little bit of a term in terms of your profession. The term is called confirmatory bias. Are you familiar with that term?
Vaguely familiar. Confirmation bias is what I think I know it as.
Okay, and explain to me what that means.
It's kind of a term that's been introduced over the last couple of years. Actually, it's probably been around longer than that, but in forensic pathology, just the last few years. Anyways, it just talks about, you know, if you have something pre in your mind or you're told a scenario in a case, if you're not going to just see that and make your and lean your diagnoses towards that. For example, if there was a baby and somebody told you, you know, someone saw the parents squeezing the baby, you might lean towards asphyxia because you're being biased by that history. So it's kind of a bias. It's not just looking at the scientific evidence in front of you, but you're being biased by other things.
So if someone were to say that they put the procedural history and some of the events that occurred around the time of Tammy Daybell's death, that would be an example of confirmatory bias. Would that be fair?
Possibly. Depends what was told them. Possibly, okay. Yes.
Well, you talked about the fact that someone saw the baby squeezed or shaken, and then the investigation is turned that way and leaned that way, correct?
Yes, that's what it's most commonly seen in is like a shaken baby case.
So if someone has provided some information, regardless of whether it's relevant to the case, we should still be going back to the scientific evidence and base it on science and facts. Would that be fair?
Yes, as a physician, pathologist, our diagnosis should be based off science and what we can actually see rather than speculating. Again, that's how I've always practiced and that's how I teach.
And would it be fair to say that most of you folks in the field of forensic pathology would approach it the way you're approaching it?
Objection, Your Honor. Calls for speculation.
Sustained.
I have nothing else, Judge. Thank you.
Ms. Blake, I presume, doing the cross. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
Thank you.
Good morning, Dr. Raven.
Good morning.
You indicated that you are a forensic pathologist. Is that correct?
Correct.
Do you work as a medical examiner?
I have. I do not now.
Yeah. So in your current capacity, you're not in a medical examiner, your office. In your current capacity, you're not working at a medical examiner's office?
No, I'm a forensic pathologist, an independent contractor at this point in my career.
Do you have investigators that work with you?
Yes, in the coroner's office, we'll still have investigators.
So you are in a coroner office system right now?
Yes.
In the current system you're in, who determines whether or not an autopsy should be conducted?
It really varies. Most of the time, it's the pathologist who determines that. It really depends. In a medical examiner, it's different because the pathologist is the medical examiner. In a coroner system, it's a little different. It's the coroner who will bring the case in. Usually, it's left up to the pathologist in my jurisdictions to determine the level of the examination.
And we've talked a little bit about your report. And do you still have that with you?
I do not.
May the witness be handed that last exhibit?
Yes.
Thank you.
And I believe you indicated that you reviewed documents that you reviewed the autopsy report and documents that were specific. See if I can find the phrasing here. That you reviewed the autopsy report and other pertinent information. Do you recall that?
Yes. I listed a few things. Yes.
And you, in your report, there's a section materials reviewed. Do you see that section?
Yes.
Is that an exhaustive list of the documents you reviewed in this case?
I believe I've had a few documents sent to me since this report, but I believe that would have been it, yes.
And do you mind reading those off for the record, what you reviewed?
Absolutely. I thought I wasn't supposed to, but I can.
Yes, it's an exhibit that's been admitted, so I think that's appropriate.
Yeah. So I could just verbatim?
Yes, if you wouldn't mind doing that.
You have to excuse my voice. I'm sorry. The following materials were reviewed regarding the death of T. Daybell. Autopsy report authored by Dr. Lily Marston, co-signed by Dr. Eric Christensen. Autopsy photographs, toxicology reports from NMS and the Utah Department of Health. A brief investigative report from the Office of the Medical Examiner, State of Utah. A typed coroner report, not signed, dated, or on letterhead, unknown time, authored, or source. The Fremont County Coroner informal record of death report. A report by Deputy Greenhaw, excuse me, the name, Detective Fabinich and Lieutenant Powell. Scene photographs, unknown source. Report by B. Mattingly. Fremont County incident report from incident from 10/09/2019. Copy of the death certificate for T. Daybell, signed 10/19/2019 by Brenda Dye, and the transcript of Dr. Christensen's testimony, Brenda Dye interview, and Deputy Coroner M. Wilmore's interview.
And you said maybe since then you've reviewed a few more documents?
Yes, I believe so. But that was 3 years ago. So I believe a few things have come through. When I started first reviewing them, a few things have come through since.
And do you recall what those things are that have come through?
I believe it was different reports of what the coroner reported on. I don't recall specifically. I'm sorry.
As part of your, and let me back up. And these were documents that were provided to you by defense counsel?
That's correct.
So when you say you reviewed the autopsy report and other pertinent information, it was the defense that provided you that other pertinent information. Is that correct?
The defense provided me everything, yes.
Did you review a report from Lieutenant Powell regarding requesting Walmart records?
That does not sound familiar, but I don't remember.
Did you review a report of an interview with Emily Daybell?
I don't recall.
Did you review a report of an interview with Paul Daybell?
I don't recall.
Did you review a report of an interview with Jana Penrose, a relative of Tammy Daybell?
I don't believe so.
Did you review a report of an interview with David Warwick?
I don't believe so. The name's not familiar.
And you said you reviewed some of the coroner reports. Would that be Brenda Dye? Does that name sound familiar?
It does sound familiar. Like I said, one was not signed. I didn't know who wrote it, but that name does sound familiar.
Did you review an interview that was conducted with Brenda Dye, a report of that?
I believe so, yes.
Did you review a report of an interview conducted with the deputy coroner, Cammie Wilmore?
Yes, I believe so.
Did you review a report that contained some records from a Lolly Time iCloud account?
No.
Did you review a report from Benjamin Dean, an analyst with the FBI?
No.
Did you review the Seasons medical records?
No.
Did you review the Teton medical records?
No.
And I think you indicated you did review some reports of the October 9th incident?
Yes.
And that would have been regarding an attempted shooting of Tammy Daybell. Does that sound familiar?
Yes.
Did you review a report of an interview with Matthew and Regan Price?
I don't believe so.
Did you review a report of an interview with Haley Palmer?
No.
Did you review any reports of interviews with Angela Yancey?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Ronald and Phyllis Douglas?
Judge, I'm going to object at this point to the relevance of how that would have an impact on the autopsy. She's going to go down a list of every report that any witness in this case discussed.
No speaking objections, please, but I'll sustain the objection at this point unless there's some specific relevance to the autopsy.
And if I may respond?
Go ahead.
I'm reading off a list that was reviewed by the Utah medical examiners in making their findings.
Okay.
I think it is relevant.
All right. If that's the foundation for that, I'll allow that to continue. Thank you, Ms. Blake.
Did you review a report of an interview with Ronald and Phyllis Douglas?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Lisa Jensen?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Janet Davis?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Melissa Coles?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Mary Fran Jepson?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Faye Harris?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with John Ox?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Margaret Brown?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Stephanie Peralta?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Angela Johansson?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Shanna Miller?
I don't recall.
Did you review a report of an interview with Barbara Blair?
I don't believe so.
Did you review a report of an interview with Hannah Munoz?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Britt and Crystal Briggs?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Micaiah Baglin?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Kara and Sandra Briggs?
No.
Did you review a report of an interview with Emma Moss?
No.
Did you review a statement given by Greg Stoddard?
I don't recall.
Did you review 4 to 5 reports regarding insurance surrounding Tammy Daybell life insurance?
No.
Did you review a report indicating Tammy never used any sick days?
No.
Did you review her Walmart prescription records?
No.
Did you review a report regarding Tammy's cell phone?
No.
Did you review a report? Actually, I'll back up there. So as part of your review of the findings in the autopsy, you did not review the list that was just read off?
No.
Were those documents provided to you?
No.
Some of those that were indicated was the medical records. Did you specifically review the season's medical records associated with Tammy Daybell?
As answered before, I did not.
And the Teton medical records?
Judge asked an answer.
Same.
Counsel asked you about reviewing or looking at medical records referencing shaking fits and seizure activity. Did you ever look at any medical records referencing shaking fits?
I don't recall the first question, and I'm not sure exactly what you're asking. I'm sorry. Can you rephrase that?
Did you ever review any medical records associated with Tammy Daybell that referenced shaking fits?
No, I did not.
Did you ever review any medical records associated with Tammy Daybell that referenced seizure activity?
I did not.
Where did that information come from?
That information came from the coroner's report.
And the coroner's report was information obtained from Chad Daybell?
I believe that's where she got it from, but you'd have to ask her. I'm not sure where they got their medical information from.
And you talked about a possible cause of death being cardiac arrhythmia?
It's one possible cause when there's no anatomical findings, yes.
And you said generally with that, you would find a structural defect?
And commonly we do, yes.
In the review of the autopsy report, was there any structural defect with Tammy Daybell's heart?
Not that they found, no.
You were also asked about the bruising on Tammy Daybell, and I think you said you defined it as unspecified or unspecific bruising?
Nonspecific. Dr. Christensen testified to that, too. They're nonspecific bruises.
And counsel proceeded to ask you about putting pressure on someone's chest. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And you indicated you would expect it to be 2 people, at least, if that was done?
No, it just takes significant weight to do that. I mean, it's hard to sit on somebody to cause death. And the scientific literature that's out there says probably 450 pounds or more. Actually, it was closer to 600, but they went down to 450.
But you would agree that it could be more than one person involved?
Possibly.
If that were to happen?
If you have more than one person on you, yes.
And what are the other ways that asphyxiation can be caused or occur?
Well, again, asphyxia is just the process of the body not getting oxygen. So many things. We said drowning already. You're underwater. You're not getting oxygen. Choking. You have airway obstruction. Suffocation. You can be in a position like a car. People have asphyxia where they're underneath a car and the car collapses on them. The pressure on the chest. Asphyxia could be from chemical asphyxia. Such things like cyanide can cause an asphyxial death because it blocks the oxygen getting to the tissues. So the list can go on and on.
And one way to cause asphyxiation could be to place a pillow over someone's head?
You could suffocate them by putting an object or something in front of their face, if that's what you mean.
Yes.
Yes.
One way to suffocate someone could be to put a plastic bag over their head. Would that cause asphyxiation?
Yes.
And as a forensic pathologist, would you agree that you approach an autopsy more like a doctor as you're looking for symptoms, causes?
Well, we are a doctor, so we do look for scientific evidence of a diagnosis. Again, we don't speculate on diagnoses. We say this is a gunshot wound because we have evidence of the gunshot wound. We have hemorrhage. We have a knife wound. So again, yes, we use scientific evidence to base our diagnoses off of, like any doctor does.
And the difference being in an autopsy, your patient can't provide that information, correct?
That's correct.
So you would have to get it from collateral sources?
Pertinent to the cause of death, yes.
If I may have just a moment.
You may.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.